Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Rick Brewer, and for Charity Nebbe, it's Horticulture Day. Summertime is the peak of the flower season. Children are running around outside picking them, and you might be trying to figure out the best way to cut your flowers to assure they live a long life in your vase. Later in the hour, we'll take your questions about the plants and trees in your life, but we're going to start with cutting flowers. Joining me this morning is Cindy Haynes, Iowa State University Associate Professor of Consumer Horticulture. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning, Rick.
And I don't think it would be a horticulture day if we didn't have Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
All right, let's start this conversation off with a simple question. What makes a good cut flower?
A good cut flower is usually one that has a long, straight, sturdy stem. It has a flower that you enjoy and that it lasts pretty well in a vase of water. So it's not super fragile. It's sturdy enough to stand on its own, and it's able to take up water from a vase so that it lasts at least a couple of days.
And what do you think are some of the most common misconceptions when it comes to cutting a flower?
Well, some of the common misconceptions is that these cut flowers should last a couple of weeks in vases, and they generally don't. At least not the homegrown cut flowers, because it's not the same as the cut flowers we get at a florist. Those have usually been, you know, selected and bred for and properly maintained and cut at a certain stage and, you know, cooled and chilled. So there's a lot that kind of goes into something that keeps it for 2 weeks or more. Our homegrown garden cut flowers usually last about anywhere from a couple of days to a week. Easily. So that's kind of a common misconception. Another common misconception with cut flowers is what to put in the water. People think that we can add in pennies or nickels or nails or aspirin or sugar or bleach, any of these things that will extend the life of those cut flowers. And usually most of those things don't work.
And while we're on the topic of water, is there a difference between using my tap water from my sink or my water filter?
It either should be fine. I think the most important thing for cut flowers is that it's clean water and it's replaced regularly as it starts to cloud up. So, you know, whatever water's available, if you have a really, you know, hard water that's, you know, cloudy, then you might want to have something that's a little bit cleaner or a different water source. But otherwise, it really shouldn't matter.
And then what do you suggest for cutting these flowers?
Well, in cutting the flowers, use a very, really sharp tool, a knife or a pair of scissors or bypass pruners. You want a really clean cut. The cleaner the cut, then the more likely it is to absorb the water. When you're out cutting flowers, take the bucket or the vase with water in it so that you're putting it instantly in water. You're kind of arranging as you're going, maybe, or at least just make sure you put it in water as soon as possible. It's really cool looking to have a basket with all the flowers laying in it, but the faster you get them into water, the longer they're going to last.
Would you recommend using a trowel to get the flower out of the ground, or are we saying you want to cut the flower at the bottom near the where it's growing from?
Right. Cut it at the bottom where it's growing from. Sometimes this is very effective for different annuals and perennials because it often encourages more flowers. So just removing the stem down to a node, it may branch and produce another set of flowers that you can then cut and harvest later.
All right, let's get a little more specific here. So on the topic of annuals for cut flowers, which annual species are best for cut flowers?
Well, things like sunflowers are very popular. There's celosia, globe amaranth, larkspur, status. Zinnias are incredibly popular and easy to grow. And snapdragon are a few that come to my mind that are nice cut flowers that last quite a while in a vase.
If you're just joining us, my guest right now is Cindy Haynes, Iowa State University Associate Professor of Consumer Horticulture, and we would love to hear from you about your Cut Flower Questions. The number to call, 866-780-9100. And of course, you can tweet us your questions at Iowa Public Radio or shoot us an email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. All right, Cindy, what do you think is the best time of day to cut your flowers?
Ideally in the morning. Those are usually when they're the freshest. You also want to look for flowers that are just before peak bloom. So they might be in bud, showing some color. So maybe not fully opened, so that they continue to open indoors. So when it's cool, when they're fully hydrated, first thing, and you know those perfect right before peak bloom flowers are what you're looking for.
And when it comes to placing your flowers in your house, what would you say to somebody who maybe lives in a basement apartment or where they don't get a lot of sunlight into their house?
And not a lot of sun is needed for cut flowers. They've already been, removed from the plant. We often strip the lower leaves from the stems as well when we put them in water. So I'm not expecting them to photosynthesize a lot, so they don't need a lot of light. So indirect light, fluorescent lights, you know, incandescent lights, those are all fine. Just put them in a place where it stays cool and away from a hot or a cold draft. They'll last a little bit longer. And so a basement apartment would be great.
Oh, great. That's good to hear. Maybe another one of those common misconceptions that people have. What do you look for when you're selecting flowers for cutting?
When you're selecting flowers for cutting, like I said, you're looking for something that's near peak condition or in slightly in bud, maybe right before peak condition. You're looking for a long, straight, sturdy stem. So, you know, unless you have a really short vase, you want something that will hold well so that the stem will extend all the way through to the water in the bottom of the vase. Usually you look for a variety of flowers, so it's not just all one type of flower. So the snapdragons might be something you have, or gladiolas or dahlias, so we mix a lot of things together. And we look for things that we know will last longer than a day. So daylilies are great flowers, but each individual flower only lasts for a day. So yeah, it's not probably the best cut flower.
Yeah, wow. And I guess going back to the topic of water, we had mentioned tap water, filtered water, but I have a feeling that there are other ways to preserve your flowers when they're in the vase. What should maybe someone put in the water to help their cut flowers last longer?
Yeah, the best thing to add to that water is one of those little packets that you get from a florist. It's the Floral Life packet, or they have different names on them as well. They're really inexpensive, and sometimes, you know, even a florist will give you some of that when you have it. And that contains like a carbohydrate to help kind of feed the flower a little bit. It also contains something that helps keep the water clear so that the stem can take it up.
And where do you think is the best place in your house to put the flowers? And I know we had mentioned a cool area, but are there any other areas where you would suggest putting these flowers?
They look great on a table or a bar, the kitchen counter, a desk. Usually they work well in a window that doesn't get a lot of light. So you've got lots of options.
Oh, excellent. And
sorry.
It's okay. Do we need to do anything when it comes to recutting flowers once they've been cut for the first time?
That's a good question. And often when we have cut flowers in a vase, the water will kind of get cloudy and we need to change the water, and people want to recut those stems. And you can. But if it's already been arranged in that vase, it's kind of hard to take them all out and recut and then put them all back in. So if it's too difficult, I usually say don't worry about recutting. Just it's more important to replace that water and to get clean, clear water than it is to recut the stems.
And then how often should you change or add water?
Usually it's every couple of days. You want to check the first day because they might take up a lot of water that first day. And then after that, it's usually every couple of days.
Okay, great. And then how long, I know you'd said that sometimes these flowers might last only a day, but is there, have you ever seen any cases where they last several days?
Sure. Things like peonies and Shasta daisies or liatris or dahlias, they'll last, you know, easily a week if you cut them when they're kind of small and just starting to open up. They easily last a week or more in a vase. So you might have to change that water 3 or 4 times.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. And then once the flower's life is done and it's maybe wilted away or some of the petals have fallen off, mm-hmm. do you have any recommendations for maybe an art project or any sort of repurposing of these flowers that are no more?
Yeah, I generally repurpose those flowers by putting them on the compost pile. So, or giving them to my worms in the vermicomposting bin so that they're repurposed in another way. Some of them you can press, and there are some cut flowers that actually you can dry well. So lavender is a great cut flower that dries well. Globamaranth, celosia, status, all of these, they dry really well. So you just take them out of the vase, hang them upside down, and then they dry, and then you can use them in crafts later after a couple of weeks.
And I want to get to a specific flower question that mm-hmm. I have personally is when it comes to sunflowers, mm-hmm. These things are, some are just massive.
Right.
If I were to approach a flower, even a sunflower with the right instrument, I think I'd be a little nervous.
This one does require some pruners. It's a little bit bigger than a typical scissors. But the sunflowers that we use for cut flowers are usually a little bit smaller. They're plants that maybe branch so that the stems are a little bit thinner, and they're easier to put in vases, and they're really wonderful cut flowers.
And then I have another specific flower question here before we go to our break here in just a minute. What are some, this question's from Andrea in Mason City, what are some attractive deer-resistant flowers to plant?
Ooh, usually, this one's a hard one because, you know, it really depends on how hungry the deer are. And if they're really hungry, they'll eat just about anything. There are some flowers like daffodils in the spring that deer usually don't avoid. And then the smelly things, a lot of herbs like the lavender, deer tend to stay away from as well.
Okay, my guests this hour are Cindy Haynes, Iowa State University Associate Professor of Consumer Horticulture, as well as Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And we want to hear from you, 866-780-9100, Twitter questions at Iowa Public Radio, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Rick Brewer in for Charity Nebbe, and it's Friday. That means it's Horticulture Day. We would love to hear from you about cutting flowers. That's been our topic of today's discussion. Or we want to hear about the plants and trees in your life. 866-780-9100. Or tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Or shoot us an email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guest today, Cindy Haynes, Iowa State University Associate Professor of Consumer Horticulture, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And let's start with an email question from Amy in Fort Dodge. I have a patch of native prairie I've planted, and there are tons of black-eyed Susans, coneflowers, and some other prairie flowers. Any best practices for cutting some of those for indoor arrangements?
Actually, they work equally as well as any other cut flower. Those are a lot of perennials that we can put in our landscape. So bee balm, liatris, black-eyed Susan. Just look for really nice, kind of pristine flowers. I would just make sure you're, you know, leaving the pollinators there and other insects out in the prairie and put them in a vase of water, clean water, and enjoy.
Excellent. All right, let's go to our first phone call of the day. We have Sue. Sue, hello. What is your question?
Hi. I planted 3 years ago in the fall a rose, I don't know, I guess I thought it was a bush. It ends up being the sprouts are like 4 foot tall. It'll grow up to that. However, this is like the second summer and I still don't have any flowers on it. It's got good growth, but it's going nowhere. What's the deal?
Well, if it's a modern rose, what may have happened is that maybe the plant that you purchased maybe it basically winter killed, because a modern rose, like a hybrid tea, grandiflores, they are budded or grafted onto a hardy rootstock. And if everything above that graft union dies, then the rootstock may sprout and send up growth. But the rootstock seldom flowers. So if the plant is growing quite vigorously, but it's not blooming, that would suggest maybe the plant you purchased has died, and now you're getting growth from the rootstock. And so at that point, I'd probably dig it up and discard it, if that's the case.
Oh, really? It won't flower then?
Not if it's from the rootstock, no. No.
Huh.
It typically grows quite vigorously, and so it can get to be like 4 feet tall, 5 feet tall, but it basically never blooms. Do you know what type you had? Do you know what type you had?
No, I don't know. I'm sure it's not a hybrid.
Well, it's probably a modern rose, would be my guess. And so I think that may have happened. You can give it one more year to see if it's going to do something. But if it doesn't do something next year, I'd remove it.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much, Sue. I guess on the topic of roses, a question that I just thought of is there a process for, what is the process for removing the thorns from bushes, from roses?
Well, in as a cut flower, they do have tools that kind of remove the thorns when you're kind of harvesting them as a cut flower. As far as the shrub itself out in the garden, we just leave them. That kind of is a nice kind of protection.
And wear gloves.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice protection from other animals that might want to eat them.
It sounds like I am overthinking the thorn removing process. All right. Let's go to our next caller. We have Wendy in Fraser. Hello, Wendy.
Hi.
What is your question?
I have a rising sun redbud tree, and the deer ate it this spring. They ate all the leaves off it, and then the leaves tried to come back, but then they wilted and died, and now the tree just looks dead, but it has all these long sprouts coming from the bottom, and someone told me it'll never be a decent tree now. You might as well get rid of it now, and is that true?
Well, it sounds like the upper part of the tree has died, and now we're getting sprouts at the base. One option would be to try to save that tree. And what you could do is, if you have several sprouts at the base, just leave them all, and then next spring go out there and select one that you think is the best, the strongest and the straightest. Keep that one and remove the rest. And that might develop into a nice tree. It's kind of a gamble. It's kind of risky, but you may want to try that. Otherwise, you'd...
And so I would cut off the tree that's there then next winter?
Right, because it's basically dead. And that's why you're seeing all the sprouting at the base, because the upper part of the tree apparently has died, but the root system is still alive, and so that tree is trying to survive as best it can, so it's producing all these suckers or shoots. Okay, so I would basically go out early next spring and remove the main part of the tree, basically back to the ground or near the ground, and then maybe try to select one of the best shoots, keep that one, and remove the rest. If you need to, kind of stake that or support that shoot, and it might develop into a nice tree.
Okay. Is there anything else I can do to keep the deer off them? I mean, this happened late. They already have plenty to eat.
Yeah.
They keep eating my trees.
Well, you might have to use fencing to prevent that. I mean, they'll eat on anything. If they're hungry, and so you may have to put in maybe some sturdy stakes and maybe some wire fencing so they can't physically reach the tree and actually feed on it.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much, Wendy. Our next caller is Luann in Johnston. Hello, Luann.
Hello.
Hi, what is your question?
My question is about grass seed, and I want to know what type of grass seed should I purchase for a afternoon sun area? And then my next question is, when is the best time to plant grass seed?
The best time to sow grass seed is mid-August to mid-September. As far as the grass species that you choose, if it's basically partial to full sun, we typically use Kentucky bluegrass. If it's basically shady, then we use the fine leaf fescues like creeping red fescue, hard fescue, chewing's fescue. So if it's basically partial to full sun, it's basically Kentucky bluegrass.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, Luann. Let's head over to our email questions here. Just so you know, you can shoot us an email with your questions, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us your questions at Iowa Public Radio. Okay, one second. Okay, email question here. This question comes from Lauren in Waterloo. I have a few tall 6 to 7 foot shrubs, hydrangeas, and rows of Sharons. I'd like to move to a new location. When is the best time to do this, and any suggestions for transplant?
Well, basically, the best time would be in early spring before they begin to leaf out. So probably in their area, probably early to mid-April. And so they want to go out there with a spade or a shovel, and they want to dig up the plant, trying to keep a ball of dirt around some of the root system, and then moving that quickly and putting it right back in the ground. So basically early in the spring before they begin to leaf out.
All right. Excellent. And let's head back over to the phones here. We have Jim in Cedar Rapids. Hello, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. What is your question or comment?
My question is in regards to boxwood bushes. I have three on the north side of my house. They're planted almost in like a bowling pin fashion, two in the back, one in the front. Mm-hmm. And for 16 years, these have thrived. I haven't done anything to them. I really haven't pruned them, fertilized them, but they look great. A couple years ago, I did have some winter damage. I had to cut out a small section of the back of one of the bushes, but this year I'm starting to see pockets of dead, just like the size of my fist, like one branch might have complete brown leaves. So I cut it out, and then a week or two later goes by and I have another branch that might have more dead. So I didn't know if I had a fungus or an insect problem, or if there's any new disease. Is there anything I can do to care for these to make sure they survive?
Well, I would say the boxwoods are kind of finicky. It's fairly common to see some dead in them, which is unfortunate, but it's fairly common. And if the browning is occurring now, I don't think it's insect related. I would suspect it may be disease related. But as far as what you can do, it's probably limited to removing the dying portions as best you can.
Okay.
And then kind of making sure they have good overall care, maybe some water when it's extremely dry, especially do that in the fall of the year so they survive the winter better. Mm-hmm. But if they keep on going downhill, you're probably going to reach a point where they're simply not going to be able to recover, and you may have to remove them.
They look great. They're okay. Full. They're almost like 4x4 each or 5x5 each. They're big, robust bushes. It's just I'll continue to cut out the dead. But, I mean, they do, like, when you kind of, like, just fluff the branches, it seems dusty. I mean, do they need more water, or could it be an overwatering problem?
Well, they
I've been running the sprinklers a lot, and so I didn't know if that had anything to do with it.
They like a moist soil. They don't like extremely dry conditions, but they also don't like a wet soil. So typically, if you were to water them, let's say you were doing it by hand and using a hose, and it hasn't rained for a while, typically if they're watered well, once a week should be sufficient. You definitely don't want to keep them wet. They don't like wet soils, so that's something to avoid definitely.
Okay. All right. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, Jim. Really appreciate it. Let's go to Dustin in Blairstown, Iowa. Hello, Dustin.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. What is your question?
Well, we planted some daisies on the east this year, and I don't know if it was the timing, because I think it might have been at the end of April, around early May, but I think the ground was pretty wet.
Mm-hmm.
But they just did not thrive at all. And my question is should we leave them there another year and see if they come back better next year, or do you think it'd be better to move them?
Right. Do you have any growth on them now? Or are they still alive? Or
they're alive, but there's no flower on them.
Right.
There's no flower head.
Okay. And that's pretty common with perennials, that the first year they'll get established and develop a root system. They won't bloom their best, after planting. So I would probably give them another year and see how they do next year, because you might be impressed at how well they've established and bloom for you next year. Yeah, it's rained enough, so they should have had plenty of moisture. But this is a plant, too, that likes it a little on the well-drained side. It's like that boxwood Richard was talking about. It doesn't like it wet. So keep an eye on it. As long as there's still some foliage there and they look like they're at least settling in a little bit, I would give it a pass this year on blooms and see what it does next year.
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much, guys. Mm-hmm.
All right, Dustin in Blairstown, thank you so much for your call. And let's head over to Eric. He has a question about maple seeds and compost. Hello, Eric.
Yeah, hi. My question is about using samaras for maple trees and compost, if you would recommend that, and if that would be considered a brown or a green.
Well, I think you can safely compost those. Mm-hmm. If you compost those correctly, the temperatures should get high enough to destroy the actual seeds, so they're not going to sprout later on. As far as are they green or brown, that's a good question. I'm not sure how to answer that.
It depends on what stage that you're composting them at. So if they're pretty green when you're putting them in, they're treated more like a green. But if it's late in the season when they're really dry and crumbly, it might be considered more carbon or brown. They would work either way.
They were sitting in my gutters for probably a month or more.
Yeah.
And were really, really ripe and decomposed, so it kind of smelled like a swamp. So
yeah,
would that probably be more of a brown?
That's a brown.
Okay.
All right. Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Eric, for your call. Let's head over back to our email questions. Of course, you can email your questions, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This question comes from Matt. I just had a chain link fence installed in my backyard. Now the wife wants to plant along the back between our neighbor's wood fence and ours. We have about a 1 foot gap between the two. We're both pretty busy, so my goal is low maintenance and something to keep the weeds down. We have a new puppy, so I'm concerned about plant toxicity as well. Any suggestions? And what's your thoughts on ivy?
Just a 1 foot space.
Yeah. That's not a lot of space.
I might be inclined to just mulch it and just leave it that way, where you don't have to deal with weeds, where you put on maybe 2 or 3 inches of mulch. That keeps it nice and clean and tidy, but you don't have the weeds. If they wanted to grow something, it probably would have to be a vine of some type. They could possibly put on maybe a clematis of some type.
Mm-hmm.
They would work. Possibly maybe a grape, grapevine possibly as a plant. Something that would grow on the fence and just grow along the top.
And there are lots of annual vines that you could consider as well. And then the annual vines, I would probably wait until next spring to plant. And then the puppy's a little bit older and less likely to do any damage.
And then he also talked about plant toxicity. Is there anything about that as well?
We don't know a lot of information on plants that are toxic to people or pets, because we don't have a lot of pets or people volunteering for those kind of studies.
Mm.
We do know that, we don't want a pet to eat a plant that we know isn't edible. So any of the annual vines could be toxic, but we're not sure. So I don't think we have a lot of information there.
Okay, we have about a minute before our break here. Let's get in one more quick question here from our email. This question comes from Jim in Independence, and it's about pear trees. They've grown vigorously over the past 4 years that I have had them. This year, it has affected three of them. Two of them have lost their leaves entirely. Another tree has lost 75% of its leaves. Is it to say that the leaves are dead, they haven't actually fallen off the tree. What is happening? Is there anything I can do?
Well, if the trees, I mean, if the leaves on the trees have turned brown, but they still remain on the tree, that would suggest maybe the tree has died, unfortunately. Mm. Because when they turn brown but stick on the actual branch, that's usually a sign that death has occurred. If something maybe else happened, like a disease, like a fungal disease, they would typically kind of fall off. But if they're staying on the tree, all the leaves have turned brown, they probably have lost the tree, unfortunately.
All right. This hour, we're talking to Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, as well as Cindy Haynes, Iowa State University Associate Professor of Consumer Culture. They're here to answer your questions. Call us, 866-780-9100. Tweet your questions at Iowa Public Radio or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. Stay with us.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Rick Brewer in for Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. My guest this hour, Cindy Haynes, Iowa State University Associate Professor of Consumer Horticulture, and of course, Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Give us a call about your questions about the trees and plants in your life, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's head back to the phones here. Paul in Olwine. Paul has a apple tree question. Hello, Paul.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a young apple tree, 3-4 years old maybe, and last year the deer rubbed all the bark off from it. Mm. Now there's green sprouts coming up from the bottom. Is there any saving to that tree, or should I just replant it?
I think I would replant it. Those trees are grafted, and the graft union is located just above the ground. Usually you can see that because there's a kind of a knob in the trunk at the base. And so if the suckers are coming from below that, those are coming from the rootstock, and that's not the desired tree, and so I would remove it, replace it.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, Paul. Let's head over to Blake over in Boughton. Hello, Blake.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well. What is your question?
Thank you so much for having me. Actually had a listen quite a bit. Just first time actually having a chance to call in. I had purchased a pawpaw tree just recently and was wanting to plant that today. I actually initially thought that I was going to be receiving a 2 to 3 foot tree. But when it came in the mail, it was a 6 foot tree, which I'm actually very happy with.
That sounds
a little
nice.
Older, hopefully. Yeah, so my initial question is how I could kind of guesstimate how old that tree is without getting back in contact with the nursery, which I can do. But I'm guessing that it's probably a 3 to 4 year tree, old tree. But my question with the age of it is that what I was researching is that younger trees tend to appreciate a little more shade as they're first coming up, since it is a kind of an under canopy tree naturally. But it being 6 foot, would that be something that I would be able to go to a full sunlight right now? And if so, is this good weather to plant that in, just with the variable temperature of Iowa getting maybe some more heat? Would that not be the best idea to plant it right now?
I'm assuming it's growing in a container.
Correct.
Okay. I think I would be inclined to go ahead and plant it. And okay. I would try to find a site that has a well-drained, moist soil. They like that. Mm-hmm. And maybe partial sun. Maybe mm-hmm. try to avoid a western exposure. And maybe an eastern exposure would be better. And go ahead and plant it. And then keep it well-watered. And keep on doing that through the summer into fall. So I would actually go ahead and plant it as soon as you can.
Excellent. I'll do that this afternoon. My next question, too, is I know that they are not self-pollinating, as far as I do need a second tree to kind of go back and forth with. I wasn't under the understanding that there was more than one variety of pawpaw tree. and I don't know the exact variety of pawpaw tree that I have. Is there, if you do know, which would be a more desirable variety for the fruit? And I know that this is kind of getting into some questions that maybe we don't hear all that often about that. So,
well, let's say that if this is not a variety, it's just the trait, the straight species. If you get another tree, it should be genetically different. You should be fine. If it's a specific variety that you have, then you want to buy a different variety or species. That should be fine, too. So it kind of depends upon what it is.
All right. Thank you very much, Blake, for your call. And now let's head over to Matthew in Cedar Rapids. Hello, Matthew.
Hi. Good morning. How are you guys today?
Doing well. What is your question?
I just bought a house. I got a maple in the front yard, a mystery tree in the backyard, and they look good, but I want to make sure, kind of like you get a well checkup at the hospital. So I was wanting to see if I can get some guidance on how to choose a good arborist to come out, take a look, and tell me what we're doing and if we're doing it right, type of thing.
Okay. I would start in the phone book, actually. I would look under tree service, and I would look at the ads very closely, and I want a company that has certified arborist on their staff. And if they do so, they're going to note that in their ad. Another approach is to go on the computer, go to a search engine, and type in trees are good. That's a website of a professional organization. And one option is to find an arborist. You click on that, and then you enter some data, including your zip code, and then they give you a list of certified arborists within 50 miles or 100 miles of your location, which is great.
Awesome. Well, thanks for that tip, Richard. And Matthew, best of luck with your tree. Let's head over to Annie in Michigan. Hello, Annie.
Hi there. How's it going?
Good. What is your question?
Sure. So my question has to do with cutting flowers,
mm-hmm.
specifically the chicory plant. We have a lot of them in Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and I love their periwinkle colors.
Yeah.
But I have not had any success with cutting them. Do you have any tips with that?
Yeah, it's some flowers just don't last as well in a vase as others. And chicory, though it's a really tough and adaptable and durable plant outside along the roadsides, it just kind of wilts really quickly in a vase. Sometimes with cut flowers that have like a really thick sap, sometimes we can flame the end of that that cut end to kind of stop that excess sap from leaving. So you might want to try that. You know, and it's just usually holding it over a candle or a matchstick just for a second or two. So that may help. Otherwise, it's, you know, that's one of those flowers that you can enjoy indoors for a day or two, but it probably isn't going to last much longer. I'm sorry to say.
All right. Well, Annie, best of luck with your chicory, and thank you for that advice, Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's head over to Jeremy. Hello, Jeremy. Jeremy, hello. Hi there, Jeremy. What is your question?
So I had planted a row of six evergreens, alternating blue spruce and Black Hill pine, about 30 feet apart. 7 years ago, maybe 8 years. The blue spruce are all about 8 to 10 feet tall. But on the on two of them, I'm losing a fair amount of needles on the lower halves of the trees.
Okay. That could be a needle cast. That's fairly common, unfortunately, on the Colorado blue spruce. What you can do is send a sample to our plant and insect diagnostic clinic here at Iowa State, and they can probably confirm that. But as far as sending a sample in, just go on to their webpage. So if you go to a search engine and type in Iowa State University Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic, it should go directly to the clinic website, where they tell you what kind of sample they need, how to package it, where to send it. They also have a form that they would like you to print out and fill in. That includes your contact information. And then they re- reply directly back to you. But I'm guessing it's some type of needle cast, which is fairly common. And unfortunately, it's kind of hard to control, but I would have that confirmed by the clinic.
All right, Jeremy, best of luck. Let's head over to Ann in Bettendorf. Hello, Ann.
Hello. Yes, my question is about a tricolor beech that I have planted in the front of my house. It gets full sun. And it's been 5 years since we planted it. It's been a lovely tree, but this year, all of a sudden, the ends of the leaves are turning brown and curling, and then some leaves you could tell have been eaten by maybe the Japanese beetle.
I would agree with that, yes.
Yeah, and then I was really worried, and then all of a sudden it's thrown out some new leaves out at the very tips of the tree. They're like bright red.
Okay.
And it's such a beautiful tree, and I don't want to lose it. I'm wondering, do I need to spray it, or is there something I should do for this tree?
I don't see a need.
It has not been fertilized, and I'm thinking maybe it should be fertilized in the fall or something.
Yeah, I don't think it needs fertilization, and I don't see a need to spray it. But I would say over the next, let's say, 2 or 3 months, if we have some dry weather, make sure it has some moisture. Because it likes a moist soil and kind of cool conditions. We can't do anything about the temperature, but if it's dry, definitely make sure to have some water because it doesn't like extremely dry conditions. So I would water periodically, but once a week or so should be fine if you do it really thoroughly. And keep on doing that through September, October, into early November.
All right, and best of luck with your project. Let's head over to our Twitter question. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Any advice for flowers that will look nice in my small backyard that is completely covered in shade all day?
Well, there's a lot of perennial flowers or perennials that really like the shade. So hosta right now are great perennials, and they have actually beautiful flowers, and they would qualify as a really good cut flower too. So that's something to think about. Ligularia is another one. There's some lobelias as well. And there's a ton of annual flowers like wishbone flower, impatiens, begonias that do well in the shade too. And the selection of begonias that we have right now are pretty incredible.
Hmm. Excellent. And then staying on the topic of flowers here, we have an email question from Paul in Des Moines. I used to hear adding an aspirin to the water will help them last longer. Any truth to that?
No, there's unfortunately that's probably where the biggest myths are for the cut flowers is what you add to the water. Aspirin, sugar, pennies, rusty nails, all of those things have
7-Up.
7-Up, yep. Yep. And it has to be 7-Up apparently. Yeah. All of those things, there's not a whole lot of truth to it. If you just keep the water clean or get one of those Floralife preservative packets, that's probably the best thing you can do.
All right, excellent. And let's head back over to our phone. Alan in Davenport has been waiting for your question. Hello, Alan.
Yes, hello. I have a bush out front, and they're common in our neighborhood. And I'm in a service comes in and just does the lawn. I don't usually get involved in plants. But when they trim this one plant that it's a bush. Well, right now it seems as if they trimmed off a part of it where underneath was dead, and they just trimmed the surface, and now it looks terrible. Will that grow back? Do I have to remove it? What?
What kind of shrub is it? Do you know? Is it an evergreen?
No, it's not an evergreen. It's got the typical oval leaf with kind of a point. It looks
okay.
Like a.
So the leaves fall off in the fall of the year?
Not really.
Okay, so it stays green all winter long? Okay. Well, if it's an evergreen, some evergreens do not fill back in very well once they're pruned and you don't see any live tissue. So if it's an evergreen of some type, whether it's a boxwood or, let's say, a juniper, it may not fill back in. If it's a deciduous shrub, let's say, like, for example, a lilac or spirea, oftentimes they do fill back in over time.
All right, Alan in Davenport, best of luck with your project. Let's head over to Ron in Garden Grove. Hello, Ron.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. What is your question?
I was wondering if they have any information about the emerald ash borer. I haven't heard anything for quite a while, and I was wondering.
It's present, I think, in over two-thirds of the counties in Iowa. It's going to continue to spread. In some areas, it's becoming quite serious. It can be treated if you wish to do that, but you do have to treat on a regular basis if you choose that route. The insect, once it gets here, is never going to go away. So you look at possibly treating the tree or possibly replacing trees with different species.
All right, Ron, best of luck. Let's head back over to our email. Emily in Des Moines asks, I bought a house in November, and the former homeowners planted a lot of perennials, but I'm not sure how much they did in terms of upkeep. In particular, we have two large hydrangea bushes along our driveway. They are beautiful, but have gotten too large. Can I cut them back? And if so, what is the best way to do so, and when should I do it?
There are different types of hydrangeas. That makes the answer a little bit more complicated. If it's one that blooms in late summer, that would be a panicle hydrangea, and they typically have cone-shaped flower heads, and a good time to prune them back would be basically early spring because they bear flowers on new growth. So they'll grow back and still bloom. If it's a smooth hydrangea, they bloom typically in early summer, early to midsummer, and they have these kind of roundish, huge flower heads, and you can prune those back to the ground in late winter, and they'll come back and still bloom.
All right, excellent. Let's do another quick email question here. This one's from Deb in West Des Moines. My oak tree is dropping leaves with spots. Is it common this year, or is it dying?
Boy, I'm not sure exactly what's going on there. Again, they may want to submit that to the Plant Diagnostic Clinic. That should not be happening at this time of year.
Okay. Let's head over to one more quick caller here. We have Chris in Ankeny. Chris, real quick, what is your question?
I have a hydrangea bush. It's a woody hydrangea. And the leaves that are more shaded by the outer leaves have yellowed and are dying off. I was wondering if that is normal due to the shade or if there might be some other cause, nutrient deficiency or disease.
It's probably due to the shade. It may be due to maybe too much water as well. I don't know that it would be caused by disease. If you would like to send in the samples, at the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic, they'll take a look at it because these are usually pretty important shrubs. So that might be the best answer.
All right. Well, we are out of time. Thank you so much, Cindy and Richard. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Talk of Iowa is normally hosted by Charity Nebbe and is produced by Caitlin Harrop and Shirley Wong. Production assistance from Julia DiGiacomo. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. My man Dennis Reese is running the boards. Charity Nebbe will be back next week to talk about all of your horticulture questions and get them answered, no matter how big and philosophical.
If I had a foot-by-foot square of grass and gave it the perfect conditions, is grass immortal?
Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio.